Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to a very, very warm edition of Pro Wrestling Index, as we have to start every show now because Alex is cold. I am very hot. I have a fan on in the background. If you listen to both One Up and this, you've heard my explanation there. If you can hear it, I don't give a shit. It's hot. But I'll start with my, well, we've kind of become brothers over loads of stuff, but we're now temperature brothers, I suppose, rather than Fiend brothers, seeing as he's not on TV anymore. But Alex, how are you?
I'm great, except it's 19 degrees in the north of England, and you're trying to claim that's hot, and I just don't understand. I do not understand. It's winter, it gets to 19 degrees on a nice day here, and for us that's still freezing. That's different cultures.
That is literally holiday weather.
No, it's really not. I'd love to see you come down to Australia and you can stay at my place and we can have our 34 degree summer weeks.
Do you have air conditioning? Weeks.
Yeah, we do have air conditioning, but you know.
Well, that's all right then, but I won't be going outside.
No, I'm doing very well, Mr. Fiend, brother. Although the shield was at risk of imploding last week.
It was.
With you and Seth
over there being a snake.
How are you, Taddy?
I'm good, thanks. Besides the fact that I would have been coming back from Australia in and around this time, that sucks. But yeah,
Good.
Yeah, I was meant to be coming down in May.
Oh, sweet. Well, one day soon.
Yeah.
We'll have a meet-up. Maybe at a Liverpool game. Well, I don't think anyone will be able to get tickets ever again after this. Got any for sale? No. No, mate.
Are they still doing the Australian greatest... I was about to say greatest showman. What did they call it?
Greatest Royal Rumble.
Yeah. Great showdown.
That's Saudi.
So, Super Showdown. Yeah, sorry, no. Greatest Royal Rumble was Saudi. No, I went to the last one. Yeah, I hope so, but I'm not holding my breath. Because basically the way COVID is down here, we've basically locked up all our borders and it's worked well and it's been brilliant because we've dealt with the virus relatively well in relation to other places. But I don't think we'll be opening up our borders internationally probably till 2021, probably even further, because I was supposed to be going to the Euros in June, and that's not happening, obviously. So 2021 has been rescheduled for. I'm not sure if I'll get there either, so... I can't remember what it was scheduled for. When was the last one? I think it was like September, October, because it was before Survivor Series. Yeah, so I mean, it'd be amazing if it does happen, if we get it in time. But I'm not holding my breath. I even wonder if the Saudi shows are going to be put on hold because of this virus.
Depends. Money can kill a virus.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, dear. For virus, probably not in Saudi Arabia, let's be honest. Just doesn't exist over there.
So it's been beheaded.
Exactly. Let's not. don't want that happening to me, thank you. My name, of course, is Alex Barilaro. dear. But anyway, we're going to do as what we've been doing usually recently, outside of pretty much the pay-per-view schedule. We're just doing reviewing the TV and news and stuff, but we're recording on the Sunday, so this is a day before Raw. So we're gonna talk about last week's Raw, but it'll be we always promise shorter shows, but we're gonna try and keep it somewhat shorter because well, you'll only have one day relevancy on the Raw part anyway. But we'll focus on SmackDown anyway, because I'm sure if you watched it, you'll know. But anyway,
you'll know.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh dear. But anyway, we're going to start with the news. And Alex, I mean, Drew Gulak, I think it might have been two podcasts ago, might have been just last one. He had left, but now he's back.
Yes. Thank goodness, too. I mean, I think we did mention, didn't we, that there was still a chance that it could re-sign, but it didn't look good. Turns out, no, evidently it got better. Because, yeah, he basically, from what we can tell from PW Insider, I think it was Mike Johnson, basically he used it as a strong-arm negotiating tactic, and WWE caved in, so fair play to him. He absolutely deserves to be there. He's been great on SmackDown. And I know I'm slightly jumping ahead, but on SmackDown this week, when they had that bit with the start of the show with the group of wrestlers surrounding Adam, and he was saying, this is what's going to happen to the Intercontinental title tournament. SmackDown's got a decent little roster there in terms of some underrated workers, and Gulak is sort of smack bang in the center of that. So I think it's good that he's re-signed, especially given not just his program with Brian, but he is one of those valuable assets that you can see sort of coming good if he gets the right booking. So, it was excellent news, and fair play to him for getting more money as well.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And to do, feel free to add anything on the Gulak, but I mean, again, Alex mentioned the SmackDown roster there, but SmackDown's got a new part of the roster, and again, probably someone who maybe not underrated in NXT, but he of course will be underrated and underused on the main roster like everyone bloody else. It's Matt Riddle.
Oh, it's both exciting and scary news. Because when you think of the potential of what Matt Riddle could do in the ring with the likes of, especially now SmackDown's got quite a decent roster, as you guys have mentioned, just picturing, you know, Riddle versus AJ, Riddle versus Daniel Bryan, Riddle versus Shinsuke, if they do let them go like a strong style match, the possibilities are endless. And then obviously keeping him for now as far away from Goldberg as and Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
So that seems the smarter thing to do. But in terms of him coming up, it looks like it was something that was in the works for before, like after WrestleMania, just after WrestleMania, maybe the Raw after Mania or the SmackDown after Mania.
Mm.
But obviously with it being in the Rona era, I think that got pushed back a little bit. I think the interesting thing for me is that from third hand, you can never really trust third hand information that much. But from third hand talk, it seems like his Matt Riddle's discussion with Vince McMahon went well, which sounds like a very, very strange and interesting conversation that anyone, I'm sure, would love to be a part of.
How do you think Vince took being called bro?
Part of me thinks that he would, like, really enjoy it. Like, he'd be like, yeah, I am a bro. All right, bro, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Something about Vince and Riddle just strikes me as the most strange conversation ever.
No, I think there's two ways it's going to go. One, Vince is going to love him and then just start getting irritated by him, sort of like with the new relationship where you love all their quirks and stuff. And then by, you know, like a couple of months or years in, then those are the things that highlight the most and irritate you the most. It might get to that situation with Matt and Vince, but it seems like, you know, the first thing Matt did when it came to addressing the Brock Lesnar and Goldberg heat, I think they discussed it. He was like, basically, don't worry, bro. I know what I'm doing. And if that side of Matt can come across to Vince that, okay, I may look like, you know, I'm a bit aloof and chilled and I don't wrestle with shoes. It just sounds like someone that's going to clash with Vince. But if Vince, I think he appreciates someone that gets the business and knows what he's doing in terms of drumming up interest and getting people to talk about him, maybe that side can come out a bit more of Matt and they'll get along well. But in terms of, I think in terms of Brock Lesnar and Goldberg wanting to work with him, I think there's still a lot to be patched up from that end. So I think those would be the payoff matches.
I think Brock would work with anybody if he was given enough money. And I think it's whether or not you can motivate Brock to work that a proper hard hitting match with Riddle.
That's what Goldberg, I was gonna say.
Goldberg is a difficult one because even WWE sort of their YouTube channel chronicled that interaction with Goldberg and Riddle that was really awkward but still somewhat like funny. With Goldberg saying, "I'm not your bro," and Riddle just kept saying, "All right, bro, I'll see you around." And again, I think the other thing that you maybe got to remember about Vince is Vince really likes, I mean, going on from what Teddy said, Vince likes when people stand up for themselves, and he likes, he doesn't like subservience. Ironically, he sort of likes yes men. He likes yes men maybe in the creative room because he's had bad experiences with Vince Russo's, but I think he genuinely likes superstars standing up for themselves. Which is why the whole thing with when Kevin Owens and Daniel Bryan said, "I'm not going to Saudi Arabia," there was no issue. Cena's done it in the past, saying, like, "No, I don't really want to do that."
Unless you're Sami Zayn.
Yeah, but I think even Sami Zayn, I think there was probably more to it because, I mean, I'm sure it'll come out soon, but Sami, the timing of Sami not wrestling, but winning the Intercontinental title just strikes me as a Vince idea of like, "Hey, you're really annoying. You'd make the perfect manager." And then realizing that, like, as a manager, you can. I just get the sense that Vince has these really weird ideas, and there's no one there to really tell. Or no, I've got two theories. One, there's no one there to tell him, "No, that won't work." Or more likely, he has even stranger ideas that get shot down, and the ideas that actually come are the ones that people are like, "All right, give him that one. Let him have that." And then the whole Sami Zayn, because it seemed planned. Like, the whole thing to give him an Intercontinental title run didn't seem all that like, "Fuck it, let's put it on Zayn now." It seemed like, I mean, again, I've gone off on another tangent, but it seemed like he was sort of setting that up as like, "Okay, you're a manager, and you and Shinsuke and Cesaro and everything, and you can fight Daniel, but it's like Vince was like, "I'm going to outsmart the Smarks because I'm going to give them Sami Zayn versus Daniel Bryan, and it won't be a proper wrestling match." But it was still, like, good. So, I don't know. I don't think Sami Zayn's as much in the doghouse as, or like, as much in trouble as it would appear, but I do still want him to start wrestling again. And if he did, then that SmackDown roster, bring it back to the point, with Riddle would be, yeah, elite. They've actually got a really good wrestling roster right now in a company that is stacked with great wrestlers.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It'd be interesting to see what they do with Zayn, especially, well, depending on who wins out of Bryan and AJ. Spoiler for later on, I suppose. But anyway. But to do, where do you see Riddle fitting in on SmackDown? I mean, main roster's a bit tough because no one's first feud should be with Braun Strowman. But we mentioned, like, I suppose it's the mid card, but easily main title as well, considering we just mentioned Daniel Bryan, etc. But where would Riddle fit in? I mean, a start a feud, I'm thinking myself, someone like Nakamura or something like that probably makes sense.
I think I would love him to start a feud with him because I think that strong style would really come across well and really showcase what Matt can bring to the ring. Mm. I'm worried that it's going to be who seems to now be the gatekeeper, who is Baron Corbin.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Dolph Ziggler, but yeah, it's bad as well.
I thought you were going to say Dolph Ziggler as well, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's Dolph Ziggler.
No, that's the thing.
Surely they can't feed Baron to Riddle. He needs a win.
That's my worry because Dolph used to be the gatekeeper, and it seems like they're now using Corbin as in that role. And yeah, that would be my worry that he goes against Corbin. I really think, yeah, Shinsuke is a good shot. If it was me, I would hotshot him like straight to either he becomes the challenger to, let's say, AJ if AJ wins it, mm-hmm. or Daniel Bryan. or even the fact that, but it, I don't think Vince would, you know, trust him so early on, but even him just, if imagine him coming out and taking out Braun Strowman, you know, and taking the title, that you're a made man automatically, just coming out the back, and it's just, I don't know if...
Yeah, I see.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is that his contract was coming up, and it seems like this is a ploy, not necessarily that his contract was coming up in, like, let's say a couple of short months or anything, but I think it was coming up next year, and this is part of the negotiation process of making sure that they tie him down, is him getting the call up. So I wonder if that enticement also includes a run with the title.
I don't think Vince is going to hot shot many people since, I can't remember if I actually saw this or if I imagined it, but since Finn, the Universal title thing, shooting him up to the Universal title. And like, it wasn't any fault of anyone's that it got injured, but I think Vince is a bit more sort of like,
The only person I could see him do it was Keith Lee.
Yeah, Keith Lee, and I reckon someone like...
You're going to have to think of a big person.
Yeah, no, a big one, but I'm thinking someone who's so established in NXT that they don't need an introduction. Like, I was going to say Ciampa or Johnny Gargano, but neither of them are going to leave NXT. Adam Cole isn't going to leave NXT. But say if someone like Velveteen Dream, yeah, maybe, depending on, obviously, the drama. Yes. But yeah, hotshotting, I'm not sure hotshotting is necessarily going to happen that often now, purely because of the risk involved. But I'd still love to see it. I think with Riddle, you've got someone who didn't need to win any of the titles on NXT. His tag run was a bonus, I think, because he was already legitimized by just who he was and what he brought to the table. And yeah, I still remember that first match he had with Cassius Ohno with the knockout straight away. And he just brings that really cool, different X factor that I hope the main roster knows how to utilize properly, because the last thing you want is to get Matt Riddle freaking saturated by seeing him every week doing the same shtick.
Yeah, it'll be certainly interesting, especially, I haven't watched it, but you both mentioned, well, before we start recording, I should say, his cage match with Timothy Thatcher, and that's something I've not seen in WWE before, unless I'm forgetting about something, but kind of the crossover with cage fighting, UFC, whatever. It's a new gimmick for WWE.
God, I hope they don't freaking make it a pay-per-view. Yeah, WWE presents the UFC pay-per-view.
With special guest referee Dana fucking White.
Yeah. I wouldn't put it past them. Although Kurt Angle was very wholesome in that match. It was a brilliant match, by the way.
I will watch it.
Yeah. But yeah, Kurt Angle was very... He was just sort of there. Didn't get in the way. It was nice to have him. So it was like, very wholesome Kurt.
I mean, I know he's retired and stuff, but Kurt announcing Riddle is... That just because he was about, or more than that? But Matt Riddle doesn't really need more, does he?
Probably not. I don't think you'd have Kurt Angle as a mouthpiece either.
No.
Because he's not the greatest.
The only person he's been a mouthpiece for is his son, Jason Jordan, obviously.
Yes, that's who we saw on SmackDown.
I know.
Again, we're jumping ahead, but old mate Jason Jordan.
Jamie Noble was going to bang out them police officers.
Yeah.
He probably did. That's why he got out.
Oh, dear.
But let's move on. Last piece of news is WWE starting to think about bringing back a live event schedule. But obviously, I imagine this news may have came out before the... what's the right word? Upheaval? Riots? Protests? That's the word I'm looking for. Jesus Christ. Which I imagine all three of us fully agree with. Well, the message behind, certainly. But America's such a weird place. I mean, we live in England, you live in Australia. You mentioned how Australia's handling the COVID situation. Britain not as well. but is it right to start thinking? Obviously, you've got to start planning for it to deal with, but it's a bit. Seems a bit premature because they've only just started getting crowds back, which is people that are already in house.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the emphasis of it is planning it, not necessarily looking to execute it anytime soon. It seems like the narrative is that they just want to be ready for when the green light is given, opposed to waiting for the green light and then trying to fumble around to get everything ready. So they basically, you know, if let's say for some, you know, reason, the governor of Florida was to say tomorrow, okay, live events are now okay, WWE would probably open up Raw, you know, they'll try sell tickets to Raw on that Monday. That's the kind of preparation they're looking for, that as soon as the green light's given, they're ready.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's not like they've been socially distancing or anything anyway, even before the protests, so why not? As long as they're tested and got a mask, just like the people in the crowd. What did you think of I'm going to say strange crowd, which kind of sums up my thoughts, but it just reminded me of like old Era SmackDown when it was pre-recorded, and you just get the reaction they wanted.
That's the thing. Yeah. I think that's the problem with WWE is everything's usually overproduced.
Yeah.
Whereas, they may do the right thing, and then they overproduce that right thing, and then they'll throw it back at you and say, "Oh, well, you guys wanted a crowd, but now you're complaining that it's not good." Then it's like, no, that's not the issue. It needed a crowd because those dead arenas, those quiet arenas were it really brought the energy down. But having them, you know, standing, you know, not allowed to have chairs because Vince wasn't keen on them having chairs and looking like an indie show, is just a weird trope. And then them cheering when this, you know, like, on command, it's almost like they were in a proper studio shooting some sort of Oprah show where there's a camera, you know, behind the cameraman. Yeah. There's those placards that says cheer and boo and woo. It was just overproduced, but I think it still added an element, especially for guys like Apollo Crews. I can imagine winning your first title, mate, you know, on the main roster, having a crowd there, it feels a lot better than it being just a dead crowd.
Yeah, I think it helped in some of the regards. I mean, but yeah, I think you're right. I think we need the crowd and enjoy the crowd, but like the on cue, as you said, cheers and boos and stuff. It just let them just be natural, like just not over the top and just start calling people like dickheads and started singing indie tunes and stuff like that, because that would piss off Vince, obviously.
And stop wadding people?
No. No.
Get them some damn chairs as well.
Jesus. Flip it off. That's just stupid. Doesn't even have to be like steel chairs. Just get them like nice padded chairs.
Yeah. 6 hours they had to stand up between all the freaking taping. I'm sure apparently there were breaks in between and stuff, but that's just a long time.
Just sit on
my
the floor.
Thing was like, just why do you have to have the heels? I mean, I absolutely, absolutely accept that Vince McMahon knows absolutely none of the people in that crowd because they're all performance center people. But why do they have to have
to be fair? Even
to do I? Yeah, I mean, that's true. There weren't many that were actually. I'm glad that was the case, though. I'm glad they didn't have anyone like from proper NXT continuity, because that would have sort of wrecked things.
Unless it's going to be a story, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, people have seen the Four Horsewomen, Marina Shafir and Jessamyn Duke. They were cheering faces. Like, why? Why not just have the heels cheer the heels like an actual normal wrestling crowd? Because the heels do get cheered, and no matter what WWE want to say, they do get cheered. It's just, yeah, another one of those weird, confounding things about that company.
One of them should start a CM Punk chant.
That's future endeavor if I've ever seen it.
Jesus. But I think that's the end of the news. Unless I've missed something. Don't think I have. We're not going to do ratings because who cares? I think AEW beat NXT. There you go. And you've probably seen it on Twitter because this is Sunday. So let's get into TV. As I mentioned, we're going to try and go through Raw somewhat quickish. The Kevin Owens show with the women in that were going to be in the triple threat match later on. Alex, the women's stuff, who cares? We'll talk about them when it gets to their match. But the use of Kevin Owens since he's came back and what happens later on, it's a tad strange, considering he just had his WrestleMania moment. Unless they're just kind of making people forget about that to make Seth Rollins look like a bigger deal. Is there anything I can think of?
I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head there. I think they want to make Seth Rollins look good, so they're not necessarily ramping it up. But at the same time, Kevin Owens has done interviews since, basically saying, "Yep, I beat Seth Rollins. I got my win, but it took the wind out of me." Obviously, referencing the fact that he jumped onto the freaking from the sign through the announcer. That was an incredible start spot. But also, I'm curious to see where they're going with this, because it looks interesting, because Kevin Owens is basically saying, "Yeah, my body failed me, and now I have to get it back up to speed." And the match he had with Angel Garza with his leg later in the show, which we'll get to, but with the leg. It's basically saying, he just has to get back into form. He's got his WrestleMania win now, but he has to rediscover it all, which I don't mind. I don't mind a little crisis of confidence sort of character arc.
But as long as it doesn't turn into a losing streak gimmick, which is shit.
Yeah, thank God. No, that can't happen. But what was brilliant is him on the mic with the Kevin Owens show and the little things he does. It's just so funny. Moving the furniture outside the ring when Natalya comes in, telling Asuka, "Whatever you do, please do not hit her in the face," right before she hits Nia in the face. Just some really, really clever, funny, well-delivered lines. And yeah, Kevin's great at that.
Yeah, I think we all love Kevin Owens. He's just great. Tadeo, feel free to add anything on that segment, but the US Championship match, it's kind of been building in the Rona era with Apollo Crews, with the Money in the Bank story and Andrade. But since Andrade's off-screen issues, I'll say, I always thought his US title reign was probably on its last legs as soon as he screwed up out the ring. I can't remember it being released what he actually did, but he screwed up nevertheless. I always thought it was on its last leg, so this didn't surprise me. But it's a good, it's a nice moment for Apollo Crews.
Yeah, it's a nice win, nice moment. With regards to Andrade, it's just, you know, as you say, we don't know exactly what happened. Just the fact that he failed a wellness test, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's, you know, drug related or anything like that. It could be, you know, smoking weed or something like that. Mm-hmm. We generally don't know. It's just under the scope of that wellness program. With regards to Apollo, I thought he looked really good in the match. It was interesting the way he won it, though. He didn't win it with his finishing move, which I suppose speaks to what you were saying with Andrade being on his last legs with the title. Very underwhelming run with the title by Andrade, in my opinion. I thought he really could have done a lot more. And then with Apollo, I just hope they give him some sort of character, because the whole rah-rah babyface gimmick, which isn't really a gimmick, seems like very Finn Balor-ish. And he seemed to struggle with that when they gave that to him.
Feel free to correct me, because I had not seen him when he was in Indies, but was that not what Who Our Nation was, or was there more depth to it? Was it Who Our Nation? Pretty sure it was.
Yeah, it was Who Our Nation, and yeah, it was very similar. But he had the athleticism on the Indies to sort of be the attraction rather than the character.
Right,
But at the same time, I do think there's something there. I mean, you look at any number of people who have gotten more edge to them, I'll say. I won't say gone fully heel, because sometimes it doesn't take going fully heel. Just a bit more edge to them. And I think it really rounds out the character a bit. So giving him something, even giving him a bit of I hate the word underdog, but giving him that idea of I'm big, I'm strong, I smile a lot. Where's that got me? Now I just want to win, and I'll just win and win and win. I think that could work. But yeah, what Teddy said, it was interesting, the fact that he won with the, it was his old finishing move, sort of, the Gorilla Press Slam Moonsault, but then he added on a standing shooting star as well, but it wasn't actually his real finisher. So, yeah, Andrade's title run has been hampered by the fact that, obviously, the Rona era came in. I don't remember him defending it on pay-per-view more than once, if at all.
I can't remember who defended it, to be honest.
Yeah. But it was interesting that when he did get done, they didn't strip him of the title. So clearly they still like him because they didn't do a Sami Zayn and strip him of the title straight away. But by that same token, yeah, his run was always destined to end.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think's next for him? I mean, they'll probably do the rematch with Apollo Crews, but him and is now connected with Kevin Owens. I mean, that'd be a match I'd like to see.
Yeah, and the Zelina thing was interesting too. The Zelina getting hurt, and the idea that maybe he'll be saying, like, I don't need Zelina to win. So Zelina takes a slight back seat, stays with Angel Garza for a little bit. Yeah, it'd be very interesting. I don't know what's next for him, I'll be honest. I'm assuming another US title match or maybe, yeah, Kevin Owens.
Yeah, I mean, rematch at Backlash then move on, probably. You'd probably think. But yeah, I like Andrade. He was probably... I never used to like him, but then that match with Gargano happened and yeah. he just went off with my estimations then. But... anyway, he'll have better things to come, I imagine. Women's tag team segment, seeing as you're Australian, Alex, Iconics, they made up. There was one.
Iconics!
Yeah.
They did make up. I was so pleased after the heartbreak of what they teased with the slap that was felt around the world. Around the world it was felt. So I'm very glad the Iconics are back in action. Although, and actually it's been a good week for the women's tag division, actually, because we're going to come to this later. But yeah, the both sort of segments were actually really great on Monday Night Raw and Friday Night SmackDown, I thought.
Yep. Iconics are not mortal enemies after a slap. Imagine if they like accidentally bumped into each other or something. Jesus.
I know. Incredible. Imagine. Good God.
Absolutely. Tadiwa, the VIP lounge. Let's kind of connect the end segment as well. I mean, the match with Street Profits, Christ. Memory went there. Was all right, but the building Lashley quite well. And MVP in this manager role, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think they're building him well. They were building him from the ground up, effectively, because they had really destroyed him. But I think MVP is doing a really, really good job. I'm enjoying his out-of-the-ring action. I don't think we need to see him much in the ring, in my opinion. But definitely outside
he's
the ring.
Brilliant, isn't he?
The one thing he's doing, which seems to be...
At being a manager.
I think the thing that seems to blow the mind of WWE, it seems, is he's actually making sense. Which seems like such an easy concept, but it's such a foreign concept in WWE. Whenever he speaks, you know, he makes sense. He's speaking about Lashley not being where he should be, about how, you know, Lana has lost the focus. And even the fact that, you know, if you think of what Lana did for Rusev, I hope they play into that fact that look what you did for Rusev. You can't even get Bobby Lashley out of back-to-back bookings with R-Truth. You know, something like that. But yeah, hopefully this continues to build and it should be a good match between him and Drew McIntyre coming forward. And then in terms of the main event as well, I wasn't a big fan of the Street Profits being in this one because I wasn't sure how they were going to get away with not taking the pin.
I thought this was what Ricochet and Alexander were for.
Exactly. Where's Humberto, damn it? Where's Humberto when
he was used earlier, wasn't he?
I don't think you could get away with putting Humberto from nearly getting his eye gouged out to just shoving him in the main event. So cop a lot.
Get out there, damn it, we need you.
MVP's brilliant, and Teddy hit the nail on the head. He makes sense. He is charismatic. He's legitimate as well. He's coming in here basically saying, hey, I know what it's like to be successful here. I was here when you were here, but guess what? You haven't had a title match in 13 years or whatever it was, 11 years, 9 years. I think Drew was 13 years, sorry.
I think it was both, actually.
What do you expect? Yeah, and it's legit, and I think WWE have an issue where they try and overcomplicate things. But remember, this was 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we were getting the inkling that Lashley would be, or we were coming up with who Drew's next opponent would be, and it was going to be Lashley. And it's it's worked out a lot better than I think any of us really predicted. We were hopeful, but at the same time, this has worked out really well. And Drew, I can't remember who said it, but Drew is phenomenal in terms of he is very much the next it. He's the next, if you want to call it, next Roman, the next Cena, whatever. He is it. And he's being booked he is it.
He is booked for the next 5 years in that Roman spot in terms of multiple title defenses and stuff.
He's different as well, because I know Roman was booked like a unit, but Drew McIntyre is a goddamn freak. Like,
he is. He's a monster.
Yeah.
And he might not have the same... what's the word? He might not have the same capacity for incredible matches, because I think Roman is a genuinely brilliant wrestler, but Drew's got that presence.
I think Drew can look at him and go, I think Drew can do wars better. Like, absolutely, just possibly, just murder each other.
Yeah, probably the brutal stuff I think Drew's got down pat, but your five-star sort of back-and-forth matches, I think Roman probably edges it.
To be fair, I mean, I know it's against Seth, but Drew v. Seth at Money in the Bank, for a WWE match, it was
The best match I think I've seen him have, especially since his matches when he came back to NXT weren't great. Like, there wasn't one that stood out.
Yeah, he had a good couple of tag matches with... when he was back with Dolph, but over there I can't remember too much.
Yeah, that's true.
Actually, I think he worked well with Seth then when it was the IC run, didn't he?
Yeah.
So they might just have chemistry.
So, yeah, again, and Seth Rollins, for all the flack that he gets, is phenomenal at getting good matches out of people. But yeah, the fact that he's being booked like the guy, makes me really... What's the word? Vince basically came out and said, right, we haven't been able to build stars like we used to, and that's why the ratings are tanking. Which, to me, made me think, oh, God, they don't want to make any more stars because they think this crop of talent isn't good enough. Like, they're sort of floundering. But, no, when you can still make a star like Drew, I think I hate this quote, but... you're not just making the company the star. Like, people are tuning in. People can tune in to see Drew if they want to, especially in the UK. And I think people, for a little while there, could have tuned in to see Roman. I think he sort of lost his aura as the booking got worse. But for him to be the top guy is a good thing for WWE right now. Because they both need it, and I think it suits them having Drew there.
Yeah. And Raw needed someone as well, because you couldn't just have Seth pretty much pigeonholed into top babyface. And I can't really think who'd be the next top babyface on Raw.
Are you talking about back when Seth was that?
Well, probably even now, it's pretty much a swap Drew and Seth now, really.
Well, yeah, it's true, yeah. There weren't that many. I mean, Owens was certainly just turning face on SmackDown, and then got traded to Raw. Yeah. But yeah, no, but Raw have had a bit of a dearth in that sense for a while.
But to be fair, I mean, that kind of leads on to, I'll do the Disciples then, the Seth Rollins stuff, then come back to the Viking Ridge, because have to. Seth and the Disciples stuff, we obviously got Austin Peary joining them last week, and it looks like a much better fit, to be honest. A good start, I think, for the new three-man group with AOP coming back at some point, probably next year, or whatever. I can't remember whatever the injury is, but it looks like a good natural fit, and Seth continues to deliver in this role.
Yeah, and it seems like he's definitely found his groove, and I think it was on backstage he was one of the guests, and he was speaking with Booker about once you get your groove as a character, and you know it's no longer cutting a promo, it's no longer the job, it's now part of you. And it seems like that's where he's come to with this gimmick. His promos seem to hit a lot harder, whether or not it's because the crowd's not there and he's able to take it wherever he wants to or what it is. But yeah, it seems like he believes in it a lot more, and it's hitting home a lot better. And I think the trio that they have at the moment is really promising. So we'll see where they take that. And I suppose, yeah, with the, he's going to be hosting Ray's, in inverted commas, retirement on Monday's Raw.
I'm sure I saw it. Isn't he meant to be fighting Alistair as well? Or did I make that up? Or did I dream that? I'm sure I saw that somewhere. But if not,
it's quite a dream. But no, I think that might be the eventual program. I just don't, like we said last week, I don't think you can have any of them lose right now, whereas you could kind of feed Buddy to Alistair again if you wanted to and have that be a bogey thing for Buddy Murphy. So the other thing I just wanted to say quickly about the Seth promo, the actual Seth promo itself was great. Talking about how Ray needed to do this and like telling Alistair and Umberto, don't make his sacrifice in vain. I thought it was brilliant. But also in the bit beforehand, the Buddy and Austin Theory promos sounded like, or they were written and they were performed like it was a sermon. And this, they were like, you know, those, what do you call it? Like prayers of the faithful in church. I don't know if either of you had Catholic education, but in church they have like, oh, we praise God, blah, 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 thanks be to God. And then the audience replies, thanks be to God, whatever. The way Buddy and Austin were saying, it was like, he saved me. I was tossed aside. I'm now not alone. Thanks be to the Messiah, the Monday Night Messiah. And it was genuinely, they are really breeding that whole sense that it's a cult, that it's a, that they are proper disciples. And I like those little touches. I like the little things that are done like that, because it just, yeah, like Teddy says, it makes it more than just a character. You feel, it feels natural. You buy into everything they're doing. And yeah, that, the Monday Night Messiah cult has been brilliant lately.
It is Alistair v. Rollins on Raw next week. Or tomorrow. Ooh,
yeah, yeah, your dream come true.
Yes, I'm sure I wasn't bullshitting. But yeah, that'll be good. It'll end up with Rollins getting disqualified, obviously, but it'll be hopefully good before that. Let's do the women's one, then we'll do Raiders Profits.
Golf.
Yes.
Golf.
We all knew Nia Jax was winning because it was building to that, so this kind of just seems like filler, but fair enough. I can't remember Nia nearly murdering anyone apart from the top rope spot where I thought she almost decapitated Charlotte, I think it was. That's pretty much it.
She's shocking. She's so bad.
Yeah.
They've banned the buckle bomb because she can't do it properly. She's just awful. I can't tell you how annoyed I am that Nia Jax is still a thing, especially after she's injured Kyrie twice.
If you injure all your competition, you're going to get title matches.
Yeah, that's the thing. But she's profiting, or she's profiteering off injuring people because she thinks that she can make Becky's badass blood moment like part of her own character. She's trying to swindle, basically, off the best women's wrestler, the most entertaining women's wrestler probably that's ever lived. And Nia Jax is there thinking that she can actually get clout off that. It really annoys me. She's just terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Team Tamina.
Oh, no. She's not as dangerous, but Jesus Christ.
Wanda.
It's not a high bar.
After Nia's injured everyone, we'll get the dream match of Tamina v. Nia.
Yeah, it's the one person she can't injure.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got the trades now. They'll just chill the fuck off to SmackDown and finish the rest of the roster. But anyway, anything to add on the women's thing? I mean, Asuka, the only thing I can add to D was that Asuka is amazing and she should be on commentary every time.
Yeah, I'd rope in Asuka as a guest commentator anytime. Nothing to add on the match, just, yeah.
Go on, Andy.
It was already written out. It was already written out. Let's move on to more exciting stuff.
Tadiwa,
yep.
Golf.
Pick your commentator, though. Hang on. Before you say that, pick your commentator. Asuka or Nikki Cross?
Asuka.
Asuka for me.
Yeah, I would have said Asuka before this Friday on SmackDown when Cole and Graves corpsed like hell. And Graves does not corpse a lot. But as soon as Bailey said, shut up, and Nikki said, don't you tell me what to do, I was pissing myself. Michael Cole was pissing himself. Corey Graves was pissing himself. It was great. Anyway, sorry. Now we can move on to the important part
of
the show.
Tadiwa, golf. I mean, it's getting better every week. It is. It's amazing. And we're getting closer to alligator wrestling as well.
I know. The fact that both teams have an animal feud is hilarious to me. I'm curious whether or not, like, how long they can keep this going. But as long as they keep producing stuff like this, forever. I'm happy for them to keep it going. Exactly. And I think the thing for me is it's so different from everything else that's on the show. It's such a nice break and such a good comedy, you know, comic relief when they come on. And I don't know, people maybe that don't like it as much as I seem to be liking it, maybe are trying to take it too seriously. The only problem, I suppose, is that the tag titles are involved in this thing. And we already know Vince doesn't see the tag titles very highly, and they're now a part of a comedy shtick. But other than that, I really enjoyed it. The fact that they celebrated after they got a high score in the putt-putt was hilarious. You know, having the food on the golf course. I just feel sorry for the maintenance guy that's going to have to repair that golf course after the segment.
Nah, it was worth it for the funny.
The cuts. Oh, the cuts. The way they creatively cut the shots of golf, where there was one where Montez, like, hits the ball. It goes so low that you can see the ball just flying really low, and yet they cut to it soaring through the air and going for a hole in one. And the other one where the Ivar, I think, was hacking the ground, and like he hacks it twice, and then it cuts to another, like, a shot of him swing, and then another cut, and it's just a huge hole that's been created. And it's just, it's brilliant.
It's like amazing and bad at the same time, but it's
fantastic cringe. Like, not like cringe. You're not like, oh, this is embarrassing.
Cheesy,
like,
but oh, amazing cheesy.
This is cheesy, but hilarious and intentionally hilarious. Just incredible. And the turkey leg and the alligator. I'm there. I'm so there for it all. It's just great.
Well, do you guys think the same people working on the Mandy and Otis thing are working on this thing?
Oh, if they're due a pair rise if they are.
I know that the head writer for the Mandy and Otis thing got furloughed, so maybe she's been brought back. They're just brilliant. Certainly, I think the two off-site segments this week were probably both worked on by the same people because they were both genius.
Thing is, TV's actually got quite good, but there's still the best things on TV as I've been.
That's a good point you made there, Guy, because something I have noticed these last 2 weeks, maybe since Money in the Bank, maybe, TV's been quite good. And the state of WWE right now, in terms of the tangible stuff, so your champions, your feuds, your stables, is quite good. They've got maybe three good stables.
The only bad thing is probably Braun, because he's not doing any.
That's exactly
it. The Miz and Morrison, but, God.
But, I mean, the Miz and Morrison thing has sort of been relatively entertaining with the whole...
But you know,
because Miz and Morrison are very funny. But the handicap match is not going to end at anything. I think we're just waiting for the Fiend to come back, but still it's Braun. But otherwise, the women's tag division's been quite good. That's usually not as good. Asuka's the champion. That's good. Her contender isn't.
That's a good one as well. Nia's.
A lot of... Yeah. But then a lot of the feuds and the stables and the teams are actually really fun right now. So I think WWE have sort of got themselves into a decent state despite the Rona era in terms of the things they're doing. It's just whether they can keep it going.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But we started on the main event, but let's go to... It was after the bell. The building it in pure WWE big lad fashion where it takes 20 people a piece to hold them back, but NXT potential people were getting yeeted about like nothing at the start, which was amazing. But we kind of mentioned it, but... Like a year ago, if you said Drew McIntyre v Bobby Lashley, I think everyone would die inside, but I'm actually looking forward to it more and more, which is strange.
Yeah, it's...
And I did, I...
Sorry,
you can go, Alex. Oh, okay. I don't know if it's also the fact that Drew seems to have this confidence, but is he? It seems like he's pulling Bobby to his level. For me, and I'm hoping that Bobby is motivated and keen to go with Drew where he's going with this. Drew definitely has. He currently doesn't have scripted promos, so you can see even with the delivery and the way he's speaking, it's all. You know, he gets given bullet points and he basically has to drive it home. In terms of the segment, I did find it quite ironic. They were talking about the whole social distancing thing and everything. And then they've got like 500 guys in the ring. But other than that, it did do what it needed to do. I also like the detail of having smaller guys come in first and they got yeeted. And then they had the big guys come in to try and pull them away.
You're over 6 foot. Get in here.
They line up based on height, like school sports day, and then they get sent in basically one after the other.
Oh, Jesus.
The other thing is, yeah, the Drew's organic promos are quite nice because they led to some fun moments. Like the whole Claymore kick thing, MVP played that off really well. A lot of the organic stuff with Drew basically not no selling, but sort of acting nonchalant about. And then at the end, the other thing is when he takes his shirt off, he gets real intense. He goes from as soon as the shirt comes off, he's like, "Whoa, I forgot how
people can see me."
Ridiculous, you are. Yeah, he was just unreal. And also the full Nelson helps Lashley too. I think the introduction of that sort of new finish in Jeopardy.
The only thing I think I can think of ruining in this feud is in the match if Lana cost Lashley in the match. That's the only thing I can think of.
That's true. That would be a bit sad.
And it seems it seems quite likely now, said it.
Yeah.
Is there any
But way, also is there where does Lana go?
Is there any way they bring Rusev back?
I don't think so.
It's the only way
I don't think so.
Hmm.
Maybe eventually. Because I think he's one of the ones that they probably regrettably let go. Given how much he was sort of featuring before Rona era, but now I think they're still too not strapped for cash, but still trying to penny pinch a bit while they realise what the fallout of this whole thing's going to be.
Well, Goldberg pissed off straight away, so they might have more money. Yeah,
that's true. Saving million a year.
Yeah, it's probably more than a million an appearance. It's probably more than that.
Still only a million a year, guy.
That's true. Well, no, the Saudi shows and then WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's Saudi.
Anyway, but Saudi from is it? I think we're on to SmackDown now.
Yeah, we are.
We go from the front of Raw to on the nose beginning of SmackDown. Tadir, I'll start with you. Obviously, Jeff's had his problems with addiction, it's all sorts of stuff. But to tie that into TV, is that a tad too much on the nose, or is it just using, well, I'm sure it got Jeff's permission, you'd presume, but maybe not, but you'll either hate it or you'll appreciate the reality of the situation, I suppose. Where did you fall?
That's the thing. It was so polarizing. For me personally, I didn't care for it purely because I think, you know, and it, being on the Debbie Downer side of things, it's something that happened to him really recently.
Yeah.
Not like he's been fighting this for years and you can poke fun in it. It's just last year he was in jail for it, wasn't he? So
yeah.
I thought you could lay off something like this. You can still build the angle without necessarily hitting it right on the nose here. But in terms of the execution of it, I did like the way they went about it. It wasn't like not necessarily in bad taste or anything like that. It's just the topic itself I thought was a bit insensitive. It was good to see Jason Jordan again. Here's hoping he gets like an Edge type of comeback. Obviously with him being healthy and all of that, because they thought his injury wasn't going to be too serious, and it's just dragged and dragged, and it seems like he can't quite grip yet as well, and it's been quite a while now, and if he still can't do that, it's a real shame. But he does get used to a lot in backstage and producing and stuff, so it's good on them for keeping him around and keeping him busy. Maybe other people can speak on the segment if they were, you know, if they enjoyed it a lot more than I did. Except Braun. Braun was hilarious, though. Braun's interview.
Yeah, I just saw a goddamn car.
Yeah, he's so bad at acting. I don't know, man. I saw this son of a bitch just goes. He's like, okay.
Thing is, if
Braun,
it ends up
you're
being
not helping the situation.
If it ends up being Sheamus like faking being Jeff Hardy, how the fuck does that work?
One's
nine foot tall, and one's
dark.
Jeff Hardy.
Yeah. No, okay, but I quite like this, and I like at first I was like, okay, that's fantastic. I like that they're playing it off like that, and then I thought, not sure, yeah, because it's basically what Taddy said is like recency, maybe a bit insensitive. But the more I thought about it, the more I think it's a nice, not nice. It's a good way to get, you know, a heel some genuine heat. And doing it in the Rona era where crowds won't quite be as influential. And the fact that you can also, because they've already, WWE specifically have already signaled their intent to sort of put all of Jeff's dirty laundry sort of out there. So they're not hiding from it, because in the Jeff Hardy documentary, it was both Hardys. I think it was a WWE 24 or 365. They go in a lot about Jeff's addiction and his trouble with the law and the reason he was away for that period of time. And I think the logical extension is to use it as a storyline. And this is the best way to do it, where you don't make Jeff out to be a dick. You can actually give him redemption, because, I mean, the way I'm seeing it, it's clear that he's been framed. He's been knocked out. That's why he was looking like all dazed and everything. Maybe by Sheamus. But we'll see. And
I think that's the problem for me. Sorry to cut you off, but the problem for me is, if it's Sheamus, it's a bit shit, because Sheamus is Sheamus. That's the only thing.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, it could, like, Sheamus basically going out and saying, like, oh, that junkie's done it again. Of course, now I get my title shot. Like, that's a very heel thing to do. It's a dastardly thing to do. And you don't get many of those legitimate sort of, schemes anymore. It's mostly just like, oh, he attacked him and now there's going
to
start a feud.
We had Eric Roy like last year do this sort of stuff.
Yeah. hatching a really over elaborate
pushing boxes on someone, the son of a bitch.
Pushing boxes on Roman and then it not working out at all.
Then hiding in the background somehow.
It just never actually came to fruition. That was bad. But I think this, yes, it is in slight poor taste, but at the same time, I think to me it is slightly, I think it's worth the poor taste, because it's a storytelling device and it's compelling, and I think it's great that they're going to do it the way that it should turn out, which is the hacker comes back and says, I've got the footage of who was in that car.
That's a good point.
So again, you can involve the hacker. Jeff gets his redemption and says, I'm not a junkie, I'm getting help. He gets a bit more face motivation for his last run. So then that gives it a bit more sympathy. Not that Jeff needs sympathy, but and then again, hopefully, maybe if it's Sheamus, maybe it's someone else, you build. I like it when they build things. I like it when they develop people, and this could potentially develop three wrestlers in a storyline. So yeah, so I'm standing by liking it, but I also understand the taste wasn't the greatest.
Yeah, for me, the whole thing, it depends where it goes for me. If it's just Sheamus, I'll just be kind of met to it. But the situation in terms of Jeff's big and rehab and stuff like that, I think as long as Jeff's okay with it, I think it's all right. But as long as he doesn't go off the deep end again, then it'll look worse. But as long as he doesn't, and he's okay with his demons now, I think it's all right. But say if he goes off it again in the next year or so, it's going to look proper bad. I think time will tell with that one for me. But just hope it isn't just building a Jeff Hardy and Sheamus feud, because that would be a bit shit.
But the segment they had directly after that, I just realized it's tied into this. I thought that was really good. And for, you know, we spoke about WWE being overproduced. This one didn't seem overproduced. Guys were talking over each other. It seemed natural. And I love the fact that AJ was, you know, telling Daniel Bryan he's an idiot for not just walking to the finals.
That was so clever. Yeah, it was brilliant. AJ being smart and rational and like, yeah, of course. And not and not one of those dastardly, how dare you sort of heels. Literally, AJ was just like, you idiot. Why would you want to fight somebody? Like, I've got my clear path to the finals. Give me that. And then Adam was like, yeah, you can have it. That's fine, AJ. Thanks for coming to SmackDown. Yeah, very, very good. Very organic. Very natural.
I mean, that kind of leads us on. We'll do the Battle Royale. I think there was a bit between, wasn't there? Or was it straight after? Anyway, the Battle Royale was a Battle Royale. The only thing for me to bring up was the Bar Reunion, which... Oh, the Sheamus should have started on Nakamura. It would have been better. but other than that, it was just a Battle Royale, and we probably got the winner most people expected.
Yeah, Shorty G had a good showing, even though I hate the fact that he's still called Shorty G.
Hopefully not for much longer.
Yeah, just give him back. Make him Chad Gable again, please.
Or the Hacker number two. Possibly. But anyway.
Yeah, Mr. Robot season 5. Yeah. Yeah.
Spoiler. the Battle Royale's a Battle Royale. Sheamus won, led on to the main event, which we'll talk about. Tadiwa, your SmackDown girl beat Lacey Evans. Oh, no. Double count.
Double count.
Yep, this was one where I'd half been attention when I was watching. Sonya Deville kind of not moving away from Mandy Rose, but a match against Lacey Evans, who's been in title pictures pretty much most of her main roster run. So it's a strongish start, I suppose, but it'd be nice for her to start getting wins quickish, I suppose.
And my biggest fear when I saw it was her against Lacey was, you know, that, and I did write in my notes, and we were talking about it earlier, if Sonya loses via roll-up to Mandy Rose's distraction, we move on Titan Tower. that was my biggest fear for this match. It just seemed like such an easy play for WWE, and it gives me hope, a little bit of hope, but it gives me hope that they're actually going to build her properly. The fact that she didn't lose this match and she still hasn't lost, it seems like they're doing everything right. I would have loved her to beat Lacey. Maybe that's being a bit too greedy, considering it is still WWE. But I think Lacey is someone they regard very highly. It was going to be hard for her to be put over Lacey, I think, in this scenario. So, yeah, as long as they carry on the feud, I'm happy that Mandy wasn't even a factor or a thought during this match. Let her move on from Mandy. She beat her. You know, you can always call it back later on. I'm happy for her to move on and start getting wins, as you said, in more emphatic fashion.
Yeah, hopefully. But Sonya... getting stronger and better by the week, I think. And also, I think there was rumours she wants the Batwoman role, which just got vacated by, I can't remember her name.
Ruby Rose.
That's the one. She's fucking Australian encyclopedia.
Yep. If it's a famous Aussie, every Aussie knows it.
It was rumours about that. Which I think we mentioned her taking acting classes the other week.
Classes with the Hollywood agent.
Yeah, so that makes sense, but that shows confidence, I suppose.
Also, she's gotten better. Like, the acting classes are working, and the through line between Mandy and Lacey being the blonde bimbo that gets all the attention from the bosses, that was nice as well. I like it when a heel has sort of constant continuity in their vitriol.
Just tell you I'm blonde, people.
Yeah.
What were your guys' thoughts on the shoot wrestling kind of match they had at the beginning?
I think Lacey was out of her depth.
Yeah. I thought so as well.
Okay, you roll on the floor.
Are you going to wrestle or are you going to...
You roll on the floor and I'll do a double
roll around and kick your feet.
Yeah, you're right. It was like Sonya was just like, wait, so are we going to, like... she had to double check that they were actually going to shoot wrestle, because whatever Lacey was doing did not resemble the shoot wrestling thing. But yeah, good on her for trying, I'll say that.
It was different, let's go over that. Tag Champions Summit thing, which sums it up very well. It was very awkwardly put together, but New Day and Nikki Cross being mental got us through. It was good in its own way, but it was a tad awkward as well. But it eventually led to Sasha v. Alexa Bliss. But again, teasing the tension where Sasha didn't have her gear on and she had heels on and stuff like that. Wasn't there a rumour, Alex, that the pause in the feud between them and Bayley again or something? I'm sure I saw that and someone put that in our group.
Yeah, there was a rumour that they're pausing it because they think it needs a crowd. I would agree with that sentiment. By the same token, if you can't get a crowd in the next year, don't put it off for a year. Just bite the bullet. But like I was saying before, the women's tag division has been pretty good this week. I actually think the SmackDown women's division has been good the last 2 weeks. The one thing I did want to raise from last week, SmackDown, Charlotte versus Bayley was great. I know in Taddy's notes from last week, he basically said this ruled, despite the slightly wonky finish. But yeah, it did rule Charlotte versus Bayley last week. And the idea that Sasha didn't come out, the tensions building up, Bayley won with that roll up, fantastic. The weird commentary aside, where one person was cheating and it was good, and one person was cheating and it was bad, that sort of amended itself this week because Michael Cole was literally asking Bayley on commentary, like, "Well, you cheated last week." And Bayley was saying, "Yeah, it's because I'm smart. Did you not praise Charlotte as well?" So I like the continuity there. But yeah, that match last week, Charlotte and Bayley, was one of those ones that make you go, "Ah, yes, these two are both excellent, aren't they? And they know how to tell their story properly."
Yeah, yeah, and we don't seem to have a challenger for Bayley, especially if they're putting back the Sasha stuff. So them going for the tag titles, kind of makes sense. Say if it's a triple threat with them and Iconics, I suppose. But unless I've missed something off last week's TV because I didn't watch SmackDown.
Also, I think it was... I can't remember which one of you made this point, but Alexa is really good. Alexa and Bayley are two of the MVPs of Rona era because they're really good with their vocals and their facials and their enunciating things in the ring. And Bayley's was excellent at that in the outside of the ring and the commentary as well. And we've already mentioned how brilliant Nikki Cross was making Corey and Michael Cole laugh their ass off. But the whole thing between the commentary and Sasha and Alexa in the ring, this whole thing was quite good. So if they want to push this out a couple of weeks, in response to your question, Guy, I think they probably could do that. You could have Alexa and Nikki Cross defend the Iconics 1 week and then Sasha and Bayley goad them into a title match the next week. And that would sort of legitimize Bliss Cross Applesauce, as Guy affectionately puts them.
Jesus.
And it would sort of validate their title, right? But yeah, I mean, other than Carmella, there's not really someone who can fight Bayley right now. No, we've had that freaking Frankenstein's monster of a match, and it was bad. She wasn't cheated. She lost one-on-one.
Bayley cheated.
She was first eliminated in that six-woman gauntlet thing. Not gauntlet thing, the five-woman match. Okay? She's not been cheated. She's awful.
Bayley cheated in their match. Cheated. It's bullshit.
Daddy, save me.
So, I don't know if I want to see that again.
No!
Get off my podcast.
Maybe you could throw in I'm trying to think who on the SmackDown side has credibility. You could do Naomi because she's a face and Bayley's a heel, but I would be interested. Yeah. So I don't know if she's injured or what. I haven't looked that up. But in terms of Bayley and Sasha, I would be happy for them to take the tag titles And Bayley, I think that would elevate Bayley even more, especially her being a heel, having to defend two titles. She could, you know, it could become overwhelming for her. And then she will, you know, and then now Sasha will have a title and Sasha will be pushing more for the, you know, the tag matches and wanting to keep the belt.
Yeah.
And then Bayley's going to either, you know, cause them to lose it on purpose because she just can't take defending both titles, you know, week in, week out. And that could then lead to the feud. I'd be happy with that.
They've also been mentioning a lot of Charlotte two belts, which doesn't really ring well as Becky two belts. But I know it probably won't happen soonish, but they will want to match Charlotte with Becky's achievement, you'd think, at some point.
At some point, yeah.
Which could work if it's the NXT title.
Oh, God, yeah.
If she gets the women, and then SmackDown and Raw women's, and just, it's a replica of Becky, then it's just going to come off really bad.
Because she's Io and Rhea in your house,
yeah,
isn't it?
Triple threat in your house.
Yeah.
Should be fantastic. Which, the more I think about it, the more I'm a bit annoyed, the more and more annoyed that Rhea got the title taken off her, because her steam sort of completely simmered. But if this is a path just to get Rhea the win again, and it was just a case of elevating Charlotte, elevating the NXT Women's Division a bit with Charlotte, then I could see that happening. But yeah,
Rhea was locked out of the country for a bit as well.
She was,
so it
kind
of worked out, I suppose.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's move on. I like that you've put Chad Gable to do. I appreciate that for the notes, rather than Shorty G. So Chad Gable defeated Cesaro. We're still doing short jokes in 2020.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
It was fun for about what felt like a 2-minute match. That's about it. Can we stop using Cesaro?
Yeah, it was so short.
Yeah.
It was so short. I did like the fact that...
Why?
Unintentional pun there. Love it. You'd be on Vince's right. Get on Vince's right in team with that to do with. Oh, dear. But, counting Shinsuke as well, this seemed like three underutilized people.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll find something for all of them. I think the only interesting thing for me was the fact that Cesaro used the last ride. Other than that,
that was
I
a
just
monster
powerbomb.
I'm all for him doing a huge powerbomb. I miss Kevin Owens' original pop up powerbomb.
It's great.
His sit down one is so shit in comparison. He used it at NXT when he went back, and it was so much better. Hopefully, Cesaro and Shinsuke would be an interesting tag team, I suppose. but they seem to be setting up the Forgotten Sons, which is the next bit.
Who their promos have been pretty good. I think we said this last week. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. I mean, not much in the way of quantity, but they're pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did burst out laughing when he sort of looked at one of them and he's like, he's Captain So-and-so, looks at the other one and he says, and he's Sergeant So-and-so, and then he looks at the captain and he says, and I'm proud of both of them.
I'm a wrestler.
I've never been in the army at all.
I bought a coat on eBay.
It had to have been a rib from whoever wrote that.
Yeah. Whoever wrote it must have been laughing their ass off.
Right, what was your rank in the military?
Proud of my
I did charity community service once. Yeah. Oh dear. So funny. But
Forgotten Sons are actually getting some character work and I'm here for it.
Yeah. It's patriot stuff. Well, we mentioned with the protest, you'd maybe think that'd be the one that I'd get edited.
Yeah, but they've also done the they've done the good thing in the build-up, which they've done the whole while, of that whole thing of none of these opinions represent WWE, these are the opinions of these performers only, which gives it does give them that little bit of renegade feel, doesn't it? It gives them the sense that, like, ooh, they're saying controversial things, even though they're not saying controversial things. Because
not when people are setting buildings on fire.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But also, yeah, they may... The sentiment of those, of that, you're right, Guy. The sentiment may conflict with what is going on in the world. Mm. So it's going to be interesting to see if they temper it.
I'm not sure how, I think most of it's been Minneapolis and, I pronounced that wrong, but let's roll with it. Minneapolis and Chicago. I haven't seen much from Florida, but Florida's known for being Florida, so anything can happen.
Literally anything can happen.
Just put Florida in Google and see what comes up, people. What is it? Florida and your birthday. See what the news story is. But anyway, Matt Riddle got announced kind of meh fashion. Like, it's good, but I like a surprise. You know, if he just turned up and battered someone one week, I probably would have preferred that. But getting a nod somewhat from Kurt Angle is a good thing, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm with you. Also, I don't think they've had a surprise debut in months. Even going back way further, every debut has been telegraphed by a promo package. And it's really annoying me because I'm with you. I'm the exact same as you, Guy. And I imagine today, I think we've had previous conversations about this. Like, the surprise factor is one of the things that's unique to wrestling, that you can know because you're on Twitter. You know there is a good chance that Matt Riddle is showing up on Friday, and yet you don't know when, you don't know how, and when his music hits, and you're like, oh, it's Riddle, yay, it's here, it's fun, let's go. There is that drama to it and that excitement to it. Whereas if you know that, oh, Matt Riddle's in this next segment, it's like, oh, why just take the fun out of it, guys?
Yeah, that's the exact same for me. It's the exact same for me. It would have been nice if he, I don't know, just turned up, say if AJ wins the... Are they doing it on SmackDown or Backlash?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I think they said they were doing it on SmackDown in like 2 weeks, I think. It would have... But anyway, regardless, I would just like...
They've been advertising matches 2 weeks forward because of the handicap match as well. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me, yeah.
So I would just like if Riddle like turned up and... Even if it was just stood at the top of the ramp and eyeballed AJ or something, I think it would have been better. But anyway, I suppose we still don't know exactly when he's going to turn up, but it's just like, yeah, Matt Riddle's on SmackDown. I was like, okay. Sound. but anyway, let's not put a sour note on because the next segment, good gracious me.
Guy.
Yes.
It was a softcore pornographical segment with Otis and Mandy. And it wasn't from Otis's point of view. It was from Mandy's point of view. This is not some generic guy looking at Mandy like, ooh. It's, like, it's not like they're poking fun of Otis by saying, like, he's never going to get it. They're poking fun of the fact that Mandy is so, like, in love with Otis. And they were... Oh, it was just the best thing ever. They were necking on in the dream. And then they started necking on in the real life as well. It was just...
It's a parody of something, but I can't remember what it is. But it was bloody amazing.
Oh, incredible. And Mandy's, oh yeah, at the end, just got me. So, like, I was laughing my ass off the whole way through. As soon as she said that, I, like, dropped my phone and just went, oh, okay, genius, brilliant.
I thought when he woke her up, I thought she was going to be pissy, but then it just went differently, and it's like, yeah, this is fucking amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. In his bathing suit as well. Like, oh. It's just incredible.
When it went into the dream sequence, I thought he was going to be like skinny and on abs and stuff like that.
No, it's just the exact same. He's slightly more suave.
he's just combed his hair.
And Mandy with the bottle of freaking sunscreen squirting it out. She's going, oh. Oh, it's just amazing.
Oh, today.
Sorry, today.
You got to join.
No. I was happy to let you guys enjoy that one. It just reminded me of those like Euro Trip, Not Another Teen Movie type of 2000 movies, and I just thought they hit every single comedy note perfectly. The timing and everything was perfect. The fact that they played off Mandy being the one in the dream, I thought was really well done. And I'm happy to see where this goes. I was worried that this, the story was going to start going down or plateau, but it just seems to be going up and up, and I'm happy with that.
That's the thing. I was going to bring it up. You started chuckling. That was the worry when, especially without a crowd, we thought it would die a quick death, but it's been anything but. And there's still the question mark of the Money in the Bank briefcase as well, which is just it just adds interest to what would usually be just a pure comedy run of segments. But it must be one of the hottest things in probably the industry at the moment. I've not watched AEW, but especially in
literally.
WWE, yeah.
Literally, it both says it. The hardest.
It's my.
it's just Otis. But no, you can tell that they're like one of the things that I remember reading the other week after Mandy. It was basically said Mandy and Otis were actually really good friends in NXT, based on basically Otis joking about how Mandy was pretty and like calling her my peach, and like Otis seems like a really down to earth guy, and like, you could tell that they are, like, they're genuinely loving it, and they're happy to, like, do the kissing stuff, and there's no awkwardness whatsoever, because they are really, like, they enjoy it, and they have fun together. And it's just absolutely freaking brilliantly done.
To be fair,
and
imagine if Mandy's boyfriend got pissed off at Otis. Like, I know he's, like, quite chubby and stuff, but that's a bloke you don't want to piss off.
No, it's not. What are you going to do to him? You can't punch him. You can't take him down. What are you going to do? Well, you can't intimidate a man that just says, ooh, yeah, to everything. It's just... It's incredible. But the other thing is, the creativity in the Rona era has been excellent on all shows, actually. And we saw AEW come up with some great creativity. We've seen NXT with some fantastic creativity and the main roster too. But I think just this sort of stuff that you can do as just that sort of just really experimental TV.
The offsite stuff is just, it's better than you felt it'd ever be, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And I'm glad, like, making the best out of the Rona era is something that they can do and they have been trying to do. And I think the Otis and Mandy story has been one of those things that's made the best out of a bad situation.
Absolutely, absolutely. It'll be interesting to see how they, not top it, because I don't think you can top stuff between these, but continue it's probably the best word. Yeah, just the Money in the Bank briefcase looming large as well. The crowning moment will be a fucking amazing.
Unbelievable. And until Otis loses and then Teddy gets to laugh his evil maniacal laugh in the background.
Especially when it's
I cannot wait.
No.
I cannot.
Guy will turn full Seth. That's going to be the Seth Rollins move, and Guy will go full Roman Reigns at that point.
Trick you. I'm really Seth. if Tucker betrays him, I'll fucking fly there and beat the shit out of him. Even though he's huge and beat the shit out of me, but I'll fucking do it.
He'll try. There'll be just a legion of it'll be like the 80s. Oh no, even further back, the 70s when the Von Erichs used to get friggin' pelted with stones coming out of the thing. Tucker coming out of every building will just have an angry horn.
Fucking asshole.
you bum.
You're English. What are you doing? You asshole. Oh, dear.
But no, they're doing brilliantly. And I'm loving every minute of that storyline.
Absolutely. Main event of SmackDown, Brian v. Sheamus. It was a bit meh, the match. I thought I didn't really have anything for. That's the thing with SmackDown. I know Raw's too long, but by the main event, you just see there's like 10 minutes left, and you're like, can't really do out. So there's 12 ad breaks and shit left. But we had Jeff Hardy attacking Sheamus at the end. It's probably the most important thing. Because imagine we all knew Brian was going to win, didn't we? Jeff attacking Sheamus. That's about it. Anything to add? Take that as no.
Well, not really. I think thinking back to it, it was disappointing. I remember watching a match and going, that's sort of like, I expected maybe a bit more. Some good spots, but at the same time, you're just like, I expected more out of these two. But I think you're right, Guy. I think maybe SmackDown is starting to... it's hard to say. 2-hour shows are more optimal than 3-hour shows. A 15-20 minute overrun even every now and then with SmackDown, I think it could use it because it's one of its biggest criticisms in 16, in that 15-16-17 run with Ambrose as champ was top heavy, great, but the mid card, not ideal. Didn't have much depth to it.
Yeah.
Whereas now I think they've built up enough of a roster. Which is interesting, basically, because it came from one draftee, which was AJ, and one NXT call-up, which is Riddle, to make it the roster seem really, what's the word, like, concrete now. Like, it's proper. It's solid from the top down. So maybe, with the extra roster space, they can look at extending it a bit, if possible. But, it's Fox, so who knows?
Yeah, that's probably the thing. That's been WWE TV. I assume you've both watched, was it Double or Nothing? I haven't watched it, so feel free to correct me. That seemed to get great fan review. If you did watch it, do you want to give your thoughts on that quickly just to finish off the show? Take that as a no.
No, I didn't know who you were throwing it to.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I kept doing that. I'm rusty. It's too hot. Names and shit. But today, you go with that today. I mean, everyone loved the... I'm going to go Stadium Stampede.
Stampede, yes. Yep. That's correct. Yeah, in terms of the show itself, I enjoyed it. I thought the middle of the show was a bit filler, and maybe a few of those matches didn't need to be on the pay-per-view. You could have easily saved those for TV. Especially after Britt Baker got injured, you didn't need to throw in what's her name to be in there. Penelope Ford to be thrown in there. Penelope Ford, sorry. But in other than that, I did think it was a really good one. Cage making his debut in the number one contender match for the chip, I thought it made sense. Having Taz with him really makes him a big deal. They do have a lot of managers at the moment, it seems. Taz is awesome. So he's going to do well for Cage. Other things throughout the evening, I thought Shida was an absolute star in her match against Nyla Rose. Every week I'm more and more impressed by Shida. I hadn't really watched too much of her before, AEW, so I'm seeing it with fresh eyes, and it's really, really cool to see. You know, even coming into this match, she's meant to be the babyface, but you could see she had a certain determinedness about her, and just the fact that she could appreciate that it's a championship match and she's taking this seriously. It's a small thing like that, whereas you usually see baby faces just smiling because they're baby faces. That doesn't always need to be the case. Definitely my favorite thing of the entire week was the stadium stampede. I watched it twice because I had to show my fiance the match after, because she wasn't sure why I was laughing so much. It was a good 30 minutes of me just hysterically bursting into laughter, and she kept popping her head in to see if I was crying or what was going on, but it was absolutely hilarious. They did a lot of things that were just smart comedy. They had, the running gimmick is Sammy Guevara is basically, he just gets beaten up all the time, and he got run over by a golf cart as well a couple of weeks back. So in this one, for the opening, when Adam Page came in, he chased him with because Adam Page came in on a horse, so he chased him with the horse, and then later on there were just so many. They played on the different gimmicks of Matt Hardy, where he kept getting dunked underwater and coming out as a different character. They had also just the fact that the Inner Circle came in with like NFL like gear, American football gear on for the stadium stampede. I thought was really smart, and just I highly, highly recommend it. Even if you're not a hardcore AEW fan or don't usually watch it, I don't know, maybe if it won't play as well if you don't watch it week in, week out, but there's definitely something for everyone in that stadium stampede. And just watch it going in with the fact that this is just comedy, it's not anything too serious, and you'll absolutely love it.
This is someone who's like in love with the Taker match, the Boneyard match, and the...
yeah.
So I'll be all right. I will watch it and I will enjoy. I'm sure I've heard people say good thing. Was it Ambrose v. Brody Lee? I almost called him Luke Harper. Was it?
Yes,
was it
them too? Yeah, it was. Yeah,
was that good?
It was a very physical match. I thought that match did more for Brody Lee's character than all of the promos and stuff they did before leading up to this match. He came off like an absolute monster, and I don't want to spoil the ending, but I thought the ending was perfect as well.
Okay, cool. I mean, I won't buy it because can't be asked. I'll find it somewhere. but I'll find it somewhere and I'll watch it, because I always used to like Luke Harper when he was in WWE. It'd be interesting to see how he actually does when he can actually do stuff. but yeah, I'll check that out. Did you watch it, Alex, and anything about
it? I've watched parts of it. Stadium Stampede was really funny. And it's nice that different things are doing different cinematic sort of universes in their own way, and like they're taking advantage of the fact that wrestling's supposed to be fun and sort of wacky and stupid, which I was sort of worried about with AEW when it first started. Like, are you going to be too much of an indie taking the piss out of itself rather than taking the piss out of wrestling as a whole? But no, it's actually like the Stadium Stampede was genuinely very funny, and Cody winning the TNT title, I'm not sure about, purely because it seems like a cop-out of what the story originally was, which was MJF made sure that he couldn't win the main title ever again. So, obviously, Cody owning the company. Yeah, exactly. Cody owning the company makes the secondary title. Yeah. So, I'm not sure about that. I'm not a fan of Cody Rhodes, so that probably colours the judgment. But overall, yeah, it was, from what I've seen, I still have to go back and watch the full thing, but AEW is starting to get into their groove in terms of pay-per-views. I think their weekly shows slightly slowed down over the Rona era. They're doing some good things right, but their continuity is not great. But I guess it's difficult when you've just started out and you can't fall back on things. But yeah, the pay-per-view certainly rescued a lot of the momentum.
Interesting. I'll have to watch it, and then I can fast forward through stuff that you'll have to tell me what the filler is, and I'll fast forward through it.
There is a lot of filler. Taddy was right. Like it probably could have been an hour shorter.
To be fair, as someone who mainly watches WWE, I can't really back my horse in that regard.
Yeah.
Considering I just talked about Raw being too long as well. But anyway, anything else to add before we finish up on one of our shorter shows, which is still an hour and a half? Anyway, I will finish on that note.
I was just going to suggest that the NXT landscape will be very interesting going into TakeOver In Your House, because I think that the In Your House thing makes me like immediately think of like that old fashioned like mid to late 90s vibe, and I'm wondering if NXT are gonna, I mean, Shawn and Hunter are running it, so it could be anything, but yeah, I've got the sneaking suspicion that, yeah, we're going to get some more interesting, wacky stuff with TakeOver In Your House. So we will probably see that borne out on NXT this week, if anything. And that, again, could be an excellent show.
There's definitely a cinematic match, because I think Adam Cole and Velveteen Dream seems to be getting that treatment, or at least that pre-taped type match. And in terms of NXT call-ups, I'm not sure Riddle is the only one. I think it will become more clear later on this week, but it seems like he might not be the only one.
Any names you want to throw out to finish?
I haven't a clue at the moment. That's the thing.
The issue is you don't know, you can't really tell who's ready in the Rona era, because usually you tell based on the crowd sort of being like, okay, we love you still, but we've got this new guy now that we're fancying, whereas without a crowd, it's difficult to tell. In terms of Dijakovic isn't doing anything right now, but he still hasn't really done much. I think they need to start getting the likes of Damian Priest is...
Dane could come back up, I suppose.
Yeah, he hasn't been around for a while. In fact, he's probably still in the UK, so that's probably no-go, actually. But the one I kept waiting for, now obviously it's impossible, was Pete Dunne. But there's sneaky suspicion in the back of my head that Triple H won't let him go until he's had an NXT title run. So, yeah.
And Vince will ruin him because he's foreign.
Yes, he's foreign and he's smallish.
You must be William Regal.
Yeah, he doesn't understand.
I'd be interested to see if anyone else comes up.
Yeah, I think Dunn would be the interesting one, but obviously that can't happen.
Yeah, probably one of the big lads. Vince loves a big lad. But anyway, that's where we'll finish. We discovered that In Your House is next weekend, so I assume the next pod will be previewing it, so maybe we'll try and sneak in Raw, which as we said is tomorrow. That's why we kind of rush through Raw a smidge, even though probably still did it longer than SmackDown. we'll watch Raw tomorrow and then maybe try and get one out Tuesday, Wednesday, and then we can preview NXT as well. Thank you for listening. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for joining me. And thank you, everyone, for listening. I could screw it up my outro now. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.